Blog Talk Radio.
Live and bass from Memphis, Tennessee, this is Grizzly Bear Blues Live, hosted by Joe Mullinax.
Rhyme ruler, the mind of the master, the prime poet designed for disaster, a crime candidate, the light heavyweight, I might levitate right through the heaven's gate, rhymes record, break neck spines and vertebrae, simple and plain like Kanye, I heard him say, it's murder one when he murder tracks, I'm a dirtbag, flirting with songbirds and Birkin bags, my first rap, catch Roberta Flack, I'm a certified Mac, but I'm sure you ain't heard of that. Slim thugging them hoes, they been loving the flow. They been hunting for men like in Vogue. And I'm in season, the season vet. I don't need respect. All I need is a check. Might check.
A chance to hit pause, a chance to catch our breath a little bit, Grizz Nation. It has been a grind of a schedule for the Memphis Grizzlies up to this point. They have played 58 contests. They are 34-24 heading into the All-Star break, which has officially arrived, at least for Memphis. There is a game or two finishing up tonight, and then the entire NBA will be in the All-Star break. Thank you so much for joining us on this All-Star break edition of Grizzly Bear Blues Live. I am your host, Joe Mullinax. The All-Star game is on Sunday. Of course, the Memphis Grizzlies have Marc Gasol, Big Spain himself, Wendigo, representing for the 901 in the All-Star game in New Orleans. We're excited to talk about him and the performance we hope he will have and then some here on Grizzly Bear Blues Live this week. Way to get in touch with the show. If you're listening to the live broadcast, you can get into the chat room right now. If you're listening live on Thursday night, you can go into the chat. If you have a question for myself, if you have a question for any of our guests, that is one of the best and fastest ways to get that question in. Again, the chat room is open. You can also follow us and chime in on Twitter. You can follow the podcast on Twitter at GBB Live. You can follow me on Twitter at Joe Mullinax. And you can follow the site, grizzlybearblues.com, at SBN Grizzlies. And make sure if you are listening, whether it's the live show or you are listening to the podcast version over the long weekend with President's Day coming up, you can catch all the great new articles going up. We're going to have several posts throughout the long weekend from new writers and folks like that. And I'll mention that more here in a moment. But make sure you're checking out the blog, as always. Great content going up over at GBB. Last week, there was no show. The reasoning for that was I was hiring new staff. Very excited about the seven folks we added to grizzlybearblues.com. We upped the staff. We were at 12 or 13, and now we're back at around 20. And that sounds like a lot, and it is a good amount of folks. But to run a site that has as much content and continues to try to put out the best content as possible, you know, without driving some writers crazy in terms of writing too much, you need a staff that's large and committed. And I think that we've done that with the seven folks, and you'll get to meet them through the podcast over the next few weeks and months ahead. My guest for this evening, I'm excited about them. Give you the show rundown before we bring in the first one. In the first segment, I will have friend of the show, friend of GBB, tremendous host of his own podcast, Locked On Grizzlies, that our own Matt Ardlicka and Andrew Ford have been on in the past. He's terrific over on Sports 56 WHPQ. He's just a great guy, and love to have him on the podcast. Peter Edmiston will be back on the show. Excited to talk, you know, kind of a review of what's happened for Memphis, not just the past 10 games in which they went 7-3, and they had the tough loss against New Orleans on Wednesday. That really kind of stings, especially with the comeback that they made. But they're still 7-3 over their last 10. They're still 10 games over 500, still playing good basketball. So we'll talk to him about that. We'll talk to him about overall takeaways, expectations for the post-All-Star slate, all of those fun things with Peter. Then in the second segment, we are having our GBB Live debut of Mr. Jeffrey Wright. He's the executive producer of the Jeff Calkins Show. He also is a host and columnist over at 92.9 FM ESPN. Excited to have him on. We'll talk to him about Brandon Wright and Chandler Parsons. We'll talk to him about Tony Douglas. I know Peter and I have a similar opinion on Tony Douglas, but I'll talk to Jeffrey about Tony. I will ask about trades with both guests. And again, I'll preview the All-Star weekend with both guests as well. It's going to be exciting. It's going to be fun. I'm looking forward to this episode, and I'm glad that you are with us this week. My first guest, as I said, he's a radio host of Sports 56 WHBQ in Memphis. He is an NBA columnist for the Memphis Commercial Appeal. He also is the host of the Locked On Grizzlies podcast. As I, again, friend of GBB, friend of GBB Live, He's a big believer in the GBB bump, and I appreciate that. We are believers in the Edmiston bump as well. It is Peter Edmiston. How are you doing, sir?
I am fired up. Joseph Mullinax, how are you, sir?
You know, I appreciate your energy, and I appreciate your fired upness. I don't know if that's correct, but I'm doing pretty well. Excited that, you know, I've had a fun day on Twitter talking to folks about my favorite, my latest fling with the overrated Memphis Grizzlies wing. I can't quit him, Peter. I just can't. First, it was Rudy Gay, and then it was Jeff Green, and now it's Chandler Parsons. For some reason,
you
I
have
just
a type.
Can't
you have
quit.
A type, Joe. Obviously, you have a type. I mean, that's what you what you're into. You want you are tantalized by the physical possibilities of these gentlemen that appear to be so many things. And yet they truly deliver. What do they truly deliver for you, Joe? Yes, exactly. This is why this let this be an intervention as much as anything else.
It's a vicious circle is what it is. I'm developing a pattern here, you know, and like you said, I do have a type. I like tall wings who have the ability to score the basketball in theory, and they just can't get it done when the times are necessary. Thankfully, Chandler Parsons has a bit of an excuse. But, you know, when we had these conversations a couple of years ago or the past 2 years, Peter, you and I tried to make excuses for Jeff Green. Maybe I just need to quit Grizzlies wings altogether. That's possible. Maybe
well,
I need
that would
to start.
Have been, that would be my advice to you, Joe. But, you know, if you want to go to Cancun like everybody else is, then that's up to you.
Before we get started, I do kind of want your take because it kind of morphed into this, our conversations on Twitter, Grizzlies Twitter, at least. The idea, and Chris Harrington tweeted out a better poll than I did, would you rather ride in a Tesla with Marc Gasol, not ride with Tesla? That was something that we had to make sure it was clear. All the history nerds out there, you're not riding with Tesla, the electricity man. Exactly. Not riding with him. Would you drive a Tesla? Would you rather ride in a Tesla, you know, the 8 hours or so from Memphis to New Orleans with Marc Gasol? Or would you rather, for your all-star break vacation, go to Cancun with Chandler Parsons? That's a tough question. There were a lot of liars in that poll. I think last time I checked it, it was like 64-36 New Orleans. And don't get me wrong, I like New Orleans, and I'd really like to visit there. As I said, I was stupid when I lived in Memphis and never visited NOLA. But 64% New Orleans to 36% Cancun with Chandler Parsons, I think there's some liars in that poll.
Well, I mean, listen, let's be honest. This is all about your personality. You know, it's as much a Rorschach test as anything else. So what sort of person are you? Do you want to go to Cancun with Chandler Parsons and you'll be an extra in a Girls Gone Wild video? Or do you want to sit down and have a contemplative discussion of various aspects of basketball and philosophy and life and politics and everything else with Marc Gasol, where it can get very, very deep and you can go down the rabbit hole pretty quick? I've had a fair few lengthy conversations with Mark. I've had fewer of those with Chandler, although I've had, you know, one or two. And, you know, I'm certainly, you know, I voted in Chris's poll. You know, I would much rather, I've had some, you know, interesting, really fascinating talks with Mark. Mark's a fascinating dude. And, you know, were I maybe, you know, 10 years younger, you know, our friend Jeffrey Wright, who's coming on next, maybe he would want to go to Cancun. But I'm a family man, you know, and so I'm not really
sure
all that interested in whatever the hell is going to happen down there. I mean, you know, I'm a little intrigued, but that would be about it. So no, I don't think the conversation is going to be as much fun, to be honest with you. But probably a lot of drinking, so that's cool, I guess.
A lot of drinking. You know, a lot of girls, like you said, and you made a good point there, and that's kind of where I would land as well. The most exciting part of my week this week, Peter, was my daughter kind of taking her first real steps. So, you know, when you're at that stage in your life, you're just, like I think I said, I'm tired just thinking about going to Cancun. So I'll let Chandler Parsons. She's 17 months, so she's a little bit behind. Yeah, so but that's okay.
Hey, you know, my son was a little later to walk, and then he just like he got it all. He kind of got it like quick. It was weird. So he took him a while.
That's exactly how it's happening with her. Yeah,
boom. You know, so yeah, it's no. If whenever you're a parent, especially your first kid, you always freak out about every, you're like, oh, when's the milestone? Oh, what are they supposed to be doing at 11 and a half months? What are they supposed to be doing at 11 months and 3 weeks? What are they supposed to be doing? you know, and you go through the whole checklist, and I promise you, you know, everything's gonna be fine. If you can take a moment and a deep breath and a relaxing moment of just enjoyment of that, enjoy those times, because they go so quickly. I was looking back at my son now, and he's 5, and I'm like, man, you know, even those days are a little bit different. My daughter's 2, and same kind of thing. So, you know, just enjoy the moments that you have. That's all I'll say. Don't spend less time worried about Chandler Parsons and more time worried about your daughter.
I've been doing better with that. I have. But no, that's good advice, Peter. I think that's really good. And now that both of us have cratered the podcast listening for the baby talk, let's get back.
Oh, I don't think so. The Chancoon talk, I think we kept them in. I think we rolled them in. You have to mix in a little bit of the
You have to bring in the real life. You know what I mean? No, that's true.
That's right.
You have to make connections,
right,
is what they say. Well, the Memphis Grizzlies and the city of Memphis obviously have made a connection over the past 6 or 7 years with this core group of players. And yet again, Peter, here we are, the Grizzlies looking pretty good. A lot of people were nervous about the Grizzlies heading into the season, whether they would be the 7 seed, 8 seed, maybe even miss the playoffs entirely. And yet again, here we are. They're right in the mix of the 4, 5, and 6 seeds. They're playing pretty good basketball. They're on pace to win 48 or 49 games. And the past 10 games, they've looked pretty impressive. They've done what they're supposed to do for the most part. Again, the New Orleans Pelicans loss is a big black eye on the last 10 games. But outside of that, they beat a depleted Spurs team. They picked up a huge win in Utah against the Jazz. They've beaten the Suns a couple of times. They've beaten bad teams. Again, Pelicans loss aside. So 7-3, their other two losses were to the Oklahoma City Thunder in OKC, not a terrible loss, and then losing to the Golden State Warriors. It's really hard to ever say that's a bad loss. So Memphis has looked pretty good, but also at the same time, they've had some issues. The past 10 games for the Grizzlies, that 7-3 run, what are some things that went right, and what are some things that went wrong?
Well, I still think this team, Joe, they're ahead of where I thought they would be, just given all the various things that they've had to deal with this year, and we've gone over them quite a bit, and I know you have written extensively, as have I, about all these sorts of things that they've done, that we don't have to go through the litany of issues, but, they find themselves where they are, very good. Now, of late, yeah, I think they're starting to figure out the balance between offense and defense. They're starting to, this entire first two-thirds of the season or so, 60%, wherever mark we are, the All-Star break, certainly not half, I think they've been feeling around in fits and starts to try to find their identity now that David Fizdale has really pushed a lot of different buttons. You know, he's asked for more from a lot of different guys. He's asked for more from Marc Gasol, and he's gotten it. So Mark is putting up, crazy numbers. I'm working on a piece that'll run tomorrow in the Commercial Appeal about some of the things that Mark has done this first half of the season. And, he's such a gifted player in terms of his ability to work in the threes on top of the passing, his usage rate now being a little bit higher. He's doing stuff that only Dirk has done, essentially. He's turning to Dirk, like a little physically bigger, a little less prolific offensively, better passer, better defending Dirk at this point. So that's something I don't know that we necessarily would have expected at the beginning of the year. But there's a cost to that growth. Same thing with Zach Randolph. You know, he's now, like a lot of bigs around the NBA, he's that, jumbo, offensive-minded, go get him, score off the bench type role that we've seen guys around the league doing. He's done it very well. Tony Allen has been asked to do a lot of different things, and now his role has been reduced in those last 10 games that you talked about a little bit, especially late in ball games. Mike Conley, off the ball, a lot more than we've seen in years past. Being asked to, catch the ball off curls, off screens, off dribble handoffs, ball in motion, be more of an offensive player, be more of a scorer in general. He's the best shooter really consistently on the team. All these guys are being asked to do more. And then Chandler Parsons, you're trying to figure out a way to fit him in, not knowing whether or not he's actually going to be able to play, what role, how much he can give you, when, if ever, these minutes restrictions are going to go away this year, when, if ever, he's going to look athletically like the guy that you hoped and expected to get when you paid. So you're working all these guys. So you're asking a lot more of each of your core guys, and then you're working in a new piece. All of that comes at a cost. You know, that you can't be consistent when you're doing all that stuff. You know, there have been times this year when the Grizzlies were, you know, really, really, really good defensively. They're the best defensive team in the league, you know, through the first 2 months of the season. And then they faded on that front because the offensive side of it started to work in, and you were working back an injured Mike Conley. Now they've got a little more of a defensive look to them at times. They can do that. You saw that against the Spurs. You saw that against the Jazz. You saw it to some extent, at least in you know the beginning and the end of the game against the Pelicans, the middle 36 minutes, not so great. But the middle, the first six, the last six were pretty good. So they have a little bit of that. But then it comes at a cost, too. So I think these first, like, 50 or so games, and in the last 10, I think you're starting to see them figure it out a little bit. And then you work Brandon right back in, all that stuff. So this whole thing is really just an experiment, you know. You got a new coach, you got a new group, you got new players doing new things. That's always going to be difficult. And if you can get it squared away in the last 15 or so games of the season where you're going into the postseason feeling good and having different options and having different looks and having the ability to play and run a little bit with teams that want to do that, then slow it down with teams that need to slow it down. The ability to go inside, you know, Mark's the most prolific post player in the NBA right now. But also then, you know, fire up a bunch of threes as they certainly have proven capable of doing. If you can do all that stuff by the time you end up in the postseason, then this will be the most potentially dangerous Grizzly group that will have gone to the postseason. But, you know, that's a big if, and I don't know if they can get to that point in time.
And a lot of that hinges on Chandler Parsons and whether or not you believe he can get. I think even the most optimistic fan, and I'm probably one of them, of Chandler Parsons, he's probably not going to be 100% this season. That feels like a bit of a stretch. But if you can get him to the point where he can play 26 to 28 minutes a game, he can give you time in the fourth quarter, and he can be a consistent shooter. He's still not getting enough lift on his jumper. It's still a pretty flat jump shot when it leaves his hand. It's not as fluid as you've seen in the past when he's played for Houston and Dallas. So 100% is probably unrealistic with him this season, but if you can get him to 80 to 85%, he really can change the offensive momentum for the Grizzlies. You mentioned the experimentation, and one of my major takeaways, not just the past 10 games, but the entire season so far, has been David Fizdale, in good times and in bad. He's been willing to experiment with Andrew Harrison, who obviously has lost the backup point guard job to Tony Douglas, who, you know, that's an entirely different topic. But Tony Douglas, no denying he is a basketball player. There's no denying he can dribble the basketball, and there's no denying that he hits jump shots that Andrew Harrison probably wouldn't. If I'm being, you know, I'm a little hard on Tony Douglas, but Andrew Harrison was shooting 31%. You can't fault anybody for benching a guy that's shooting 31% on the season, especially with the minutes that Andrew Harrison was getting. So anyway, he experimented with Andrew Harrison at the beginning of the season, you know, and that was good. It was good to see a young player really get a true investment. If they decide to shelve him for the rest of the year and sign Tony Douglas for the rest of the season, I can rest a little bit easier than maybe I could have with Lionel Hollins or Dave Yeager, because at least the guy got a shot. But then on the experimentation side, you kind of have the game six, game seven thing, right? That a lot of people were kind of giving Coach Fizz a hard time about on Twitter. You know, go into this game like a game seven, like a game seven. Yeah, that sounds good on paper, but if the guys don't execute it, you kind of open yourself up. And as a first-year head coach, you experiment a lot, whether it's with lineups, whether it's with motivational tactics. You try to figure out what works, and sometimes it's a swing and a miss. You're throwing stuff against the wall and seeing what sticks. But I've been impressed with David Fizdale's willingness to try. And I think that that's something that we haven't had with Lionel Hollins, with Dave Yeager. There's been a lot of, you know, this is the way it's done. This is the way we've always done it. This is the way that, you know, Lionel does it. This is the way that Dave does it. This is why we are who we are, and we're going to be veteran laden, and we're not going to play young guys. And, you know, we're just going to go about business as usual. Fizdale has come in and shaken up this team, and I think that in the absence of the Chandler Parsons, in the absence for much of the season of a Brandon Wright, because of that, Marc Gasol is the best he's ever been. Because of that, Mike Conley is getting an opportunity to shine that he's never had before. Because of that, you're seeing players like a Troy Daniels, like a James Ennis, who maybe wouldn't have the roles that they have on a winning team. I mean, you could put Troy Daniels and James Ennis in Brooklyn, and they might be two starters. But on a team that is in the top 10 in the NBA, I mean, especially Troy Daniels, I'm not sure how many teams he's playing consistently for. And in fairness, you know, people would say he's not playing consistently for the Grizzlies, or at least consistently enough. But David Fizdale has given guys opportunity. He's given himself chances to try things. And then when he either doesn't like the way it was going or he felt the need to try something else, he's been willing to make adjustments. I think that is a huge compliment to him. And my biggest takeaway, again, not just from the past 10 games, but the season at large, is I've been immensely impressed with head coach David Fizdale.
Yeah, I mean, I think that's all very true. It's he has a demeanor that is very persuasive, that carries a lot of weight, probably a disproportionate amount of weight considering the amount of experience or lack thereof that he has as a head coach. You know, he certainly can speak in a very loud voice, you know, metaphorically speaking, for a guy that doesn't, you know, he's walking into a situation where the locker room is settled. I mean, you have a core four, and they are truly the core four, and those guys have been here for a long, long time, and he hasn't. And he's got to walk in, and he's asking one of them to take a reduced role, and he's asking another one to do something totally different. And he's asking a third one to be as aggressive as he's ever been, and he's asking a fourth one to come off the ball that he's never done. He's asking new things of all these guys. It's hard to do. And it was never going to be an immediate fit. It was never going to be incredibly comfortable. That just wasn't going to happen. But I think over the course of time, you know, you see the versatility that the Grizzlies have now that they didn't have before. That was always one of my biggest pet peeves, is that the Grizzlies never had a plan B. I mean, it was always very much, you know, interior, two bigs, Mark and Zach. And when that didn't really fly, you had a few guys, you know, from time to time who could shoot, you know, your Courtney Lees of the world, who could theoretically shoot, but who never, they didn't really have an offense that was tailored to getting them good shots. You had Mike Conley, you know, who theoretically could shoot again, but much more difficult for him to get shots when he was on the ball more. And they didn't run a lot of off-ball stuff for Mike. You know, you always had Tony Allen in there in a very much a traditional shooting guard role, even though he wasn't a traditional shooting guard. You know, other than the cuts and the offensive rebounds, which have always been part of his game, you know, within the context of the normal play structure, that he's kind of just doing, you know, shooting guard stuff, which is not really going to get much going for you. So, you know, all that stuff has changed, and it's taken, it's going to take time, and it will continue to take more time for those things to fit. You know, regarding, you know, Parsons and all of that, I have said it on my podcast, on the radio show. I think it's time after the All-Star break, if he's not capable of giving you more, it's time to go to the bench with him. It's time to use him as a bench scorer slash playmaker, whatever it is that he's doing now, whatever you want to call that. He can do that off the bench. I think it's time to find a more cohesive starting unit. I don't think that it does anybody any favors to start these games. You know, I've spoken with Mike Conley about this, and Marc Gasol too. And, you know, just playing with a guy that you know is getting these reduced minutes. And Mike specifically said, you know, look, we talk about it, and I want to get Chandler him some looks. I want to get him shots. He's out there. I know he's not going to be out there for all that long, so I'd like to see him get going a little bit. So they tailor the offense in that way, and that's not really a healthy approach. It's not the best way to run your offense. You're going to have to wean yourself off of that. I think that's why they tend to be a little smoother in those games where Chandler doesn't play, because I think it's just more structured. It's just more of a fit. It just makes more sense. The way that the rotations end up looking. They'll have to find a way, I think, to get through that, but that's another challenge for Fizdale. And I think he is proven himself to be very capable of that. I think the other thing that has been a tough one for him is just, you know, figuring out what they can do minutes restriction-wise. You know, Mark was on a restriction early, Mike as well. They had that game that they punted against the Timberwolves very early in the season. They've had some enforced rest that they wanted to try. He tried a, you know, sort of a flip-flop rotation thing early in the season. resting Mark and Mike. You had the personal stuff to Tony Allen, the enforced rest from Vince Carter, Brandon Wright. You have all these different things. That doesn't help a young coach either. Some of that will be probably loosened up after the All-Star break, I would imagine, because they'll do some reevaluation next week and see where guys are at physically. I think that's going to help. But I think it would help to kind of, talk about the rest of the season. It would help, in my mind, Joe, if they have an actual rotation that they feel comfortable with and that they can feel consistent that you're going to get starters minutes from starters, bench minutes from bench, and not this sort of flippy-floppy thing that you're doing with Chandler, when the truth is, and let's just be honest, he's not making progress. I mean, he has moments when you're like, okay, yeah, it looks pretty good, but they're only moments. And the vast majority of the time you see him out there, that foot race he had with Solomon Hill, I think it was, last night, I'm watching it live, and it was like, that thing on The Simpsons when Grandpa's chasing the turtle and trying to get his teeth back. It was very, very slow. That kind of stuff alarms you, because that's not what you want to see from your elite, max, high-level, small forward. That's, I think, where they need to kind of back that down a little bit.
Well, nobody is mistaken Chandler Parsons for LeBron James, but at the same time, I think where you make a fair point is the moments. I think that's a good way to put it. He's not consistently there. And again, even as a Chandler Parsons supporter who wrote about signing him, and people thought I was crazy that it was possible, and it happened, it's a situation where you have to be realistic. And I think somebody asked me that question either today or earlier in the week, and I had it as April 1st. They still have 4 or 5 games. I can see what you're saying with right after the break. I think that's fair, too. You can make that argument. But if he's not where they need him to be within the next month, that is something that really needs to be considered, whether it's bringing him off the bench and that way he can go against smaller players, whether you try to get him more of a look as a stretch forward. Because to me, Peter, where you really jump out is defensively. I mean, and teams take advantage of him, especially it's like Zach Randolph. And, Zach has had a good year offensively. But when Zach comes in, you could see teams kind of change their prospects. Excuse me. And they start going into the pick and roll. With Chandler Parsons,
absolutely,
they're starting to do the same thing. And that's a real problem.
Yeah, no, you're exactly right. I mean, this is where in the postseason, these teams have surgical precision about what they want to do. You saw it with the Warriors and Tony 2 years ago. You've seen it with Zach in various matchups over the years. It's just difficult. I mean, the Zach has had so many games in the last 10 where you look at his stats, and I'm happy with Zach, and I'm happy that he's doing better with his mom's passing. It's not easy for anybody. And that has hit him very, very hard. She was too young, and it's tough. It's been a tough time for him. So I'm willing to cut Zach as much slack as I possibly can. Just from a strategic standpoint, though, you see Zach puts up 16-10, 19-9, and he's consistently a -8, -10, -12. It's just because physically on the defensive side, he gets put in these pick and rolls. He gets asked to cover all the way out to the 3-point line. He gets put in positions where he's trying to guard guys like, Joffrey LeVert or other, any kind of stretch, long stretch four, or other guys, even threes that are kind of moonlighting at four. And it's just not something that works. And, he gets caught in the pick and roll betwixt and between. What does he want to do? It's tough. It's tough out there for him in those kinds of moments. Teams will get more ruthless about exploiting that as you get closer to and certainly into the playoffs. That there is value in having guys, even if they're not the greatest players, if you just have 5 guys on the court that can all do their job with relatively few weaknesses, that gets you something. That gets you something. That's not nothing. Even if they're not spectacular. That's why James Ennis is a good example of this. He consistently has really good plus-minuses. I don't know that you would pinpoint anything in particular that James Ennis does that's spectacular. He's a solid defender. He can switch. He can defend guys a little bit bigger than him. He's got good hands. That's true. Offensively, he's pretty limited, but he can hit a shot for you from time to time. He is physical when he goes to the basket. He can get some offensive rebounds for you, that kind of stuff. You know, you don't want him to run your offense or anything like that, but he's not going to kill you. But when you have him in there instead of Chandler Parsons, for example, who is going to get exploited defensively because of just a critical lack of foot speed, and frankly, on offense, when he's unable to get the kind of lift from his legs that he needs to get that shot going, then it's okay to have a guy that's not as skilled, not as good. You'd rather those shots go somewhere else, and you'd rather be able to hold your hat on the defensive end, as Tony Allen likes to say. So that's where I think you have to find out what you're going to be able to get from Chandler. Truly be honest with yourself. Don't try as an organization to say, well, we're going to, you know, if we just keep pushing, we keep doing this, we're going to eventually. No, if you have to just, you know, wave the white flag on this season, so be it. You know, keep your powder dry. Hope that he comes back and figures it out in the offseason and is the normal, non-diminished Chandler Parsons next year. But in the meantime, you need to be more solid. You know, they still have some holes at backup point and at that wing spot that they need to resolve.
They really do, and I think there are some issues, and we'll end with that here in a moment. There are some issues that they need to continue to look at in terms of this team. Tony Douglas, like you and I have mentioned, I'm not sure he's the answer. He might be their answer, but I'm not sure he is. And that kind of ties into the last thing. We're finishing up here with Peter Edmiston of Sports 56 WHBQ in Memphis, also of the Memphis Commercial Appeal. Check out his article on Marc Gasol coming out this weekend. Also the host of Locked On Grizzlies podcast, which I still haven't been on, by the way, Peter. I got to tell you,
oh,
man, you've been a guest on,
well, you know,
on
listen,
GBB
I'll be
Live.
Joe, it's coming, buddy. Don't. There are a lot of people that I have on my list that I still haven't gotten a chance to get on. My taping schedule is very weird, so I tend to, if I know a guy or if I know a situation that works out well for me, I tend to use that. But I mean, you're on the list, Joe. Don't please don't panic.
I freak out about it every night, Peter. I sit there and I wonder why my DMs have not been filled with invites on the Locked On Grizzlies.
Between this and your Chandler Parsons stuff, I mean,
it's sleepless nights.
And then,
sleepless
nights. Franchising Kirk Cousins thing or what that's going
to happen. Oh, God. We could do an entire different podcast on that.
There's a lot
gracious.
Going on. So I feel like I would be even more of a distraction, frankly, Joe.
You make fair points, Peter. You make fair points. Real quick, do you see them making a trade at the trade deadline?
I think they would like to do something. I don't know what they can do. I mean, you have to figure out, again, this goes back to what we were talking about. You have to figure out how good you think you really are. You know, this, you're mentioning the schedule is late. I just think, like, you know, I still think that they're going back even a month or so. The Grizzlies, they've beaten who you would think they would have beaten, and they've pretty much lost who you think they would have lost to. I don't know that they have, you know, been spectacular. They've done pretty much what you would expect them to do. So I don't know how good they are. You know, when they faced, you know, teams that were really engaged, you know, teams that were better than them and were really engaged and were resting players, they got their brains beaten in a couple times. You know, I think that's probably, you know, proportionate with the talent that you're talking about. So let's figure out how good they really are and how good they can be, and then what you're willing to sacrifice. I'm going to do a podcast on a tape later on tonight. I asked folks to send me some trade suggestions, and a lot of people did. And I think people are being, you know, based on those suggestions that I got, people are being very realistic, except for my man who, you know, sent the Chandler Parsons for a washing machine at Sears trade off, which I thought was it worked in the trade machine. It worked in the trade machine.
I'm sure it did.
The money. It was
Sears has plenty of cap room.
But yeah, that's right. The big trade exception for the
exactly.
So I think that's figure out like what it is they're actually going to be willing to sacrifice. But you know, I think you could. I don't see why you couldn't upgrade on Tony Douglas. You know, whether that's Darren Collison, whether that's you know, Lou Williams, who seems to be getting more and more popular. The Wizards are certainly sniff around. And I think he will be traded. He just makes a lot of sense for them to try to get as much as they can for him. You know, I've always enjoyed Tim Frazier's work. I think he's an upgrade over Tony Douglas. You know, these are minor upgrades we're talking about here. I don't think they're going to do anything. Well, Lou Williams, I think, would be a little more than a minor upgrade. But, you know, I don't think you're talking about anything earth-shattering. I don't think they're in the mix for any of the larger pieces that are out there, unless they're willing to move guys that I don't think they're comfortable, you know, discussing. You know, so, you know, if you're not going to move Wade Baldwin, and I doubt they do, you know, I think they still see a lot in him. If you're not going to move Brandon Wright, which, you know, maybe they would, but I tend to think they've liked this little cameo from Brandon over the last few games, so they're not going to move him. If you're not going to move, you know, any of the more impact, obviously your core guys. I mean, Tony is kind of a weird one because he's been out of favor lately. I don't know who would want the, you know, somewhat injury-prone, mercurial, you know, Memphis legend, 35-year-old expiring contract, you know, non-shooting shooting guard. I don't know how many teams he fits on, but, you know, maybe that's in the realm of possibility in some weird way. But otherwise, if you're talking about just moving, you know, Jarrell or Andrew Harrison or maybe, you know, Troy Daniels, who I think, you know, they would move in the right situation. Guys like that and, you know, whatever second-round pick you can cobble together, you're not going to get much with that, but you might be able to get a little upgrade, and that would be the move I think they would make. I think they could, you know, target a somewhat of a second or third point guard somewhere around the league or a combo to allow them to use Mike Conley a little more off the ball. I do think they'll do something like that, but, yeah, it's probably 70-30 that they will. Wouldn't be shocked if they didn't, but I don't think they're going to be super active or anything.
There's not going to be any major move if there's anything. I'm kind of in the camp that they're going to stay where they are, and that was our Grizzly Bear Blues Live question of the day this week. And I was actually kind of surprised at the split. It was about 50-50. A lot of teams kind of, or a lot of fans out there, kind of leaning towards the Grizzlies kind of standing pat, thinking they're set where they are. But it, again, it was close. It wasn't overly shocking one way or another. About 100 people voted. We had 55% know they're fine as is, 45% said yes, they need help. So it sounds like the fan base, at least those that voted in our poll, and thanks to those who did, you know, there's a bit of a split there. I think it's fascinating to see how it all plays out. And this time next week when we're recording the podcast, the trade deadline will have passed, and maybe there will be some new Memphis Grizzlies to talk about. Peter, thank you so much for your time as always, sir. It is much appreciated. Thank you for the love that you show GBB. I tell you that all the time, but it really does mean a lot. Continue the great work you do in Memphis, and we look forward to your commercial appeal article on Marc Gasol this weekend.
Well, Joe, I will tell you this. You will be on the pod soon, maybe very soon, who knows.
And I just want to clarify, I just give Peter a hard time there, okay? I'm not begging to be on Locked On Grizzlies or anything. Just because it's a terrific podcast hosted by a wonderful host doesn't mean that I'm angling to be a guest on the show, all right? I just want to make sure that's perfectly clear.
It literally could not be clearer, and I think that's very important for everyone to understand. I do enjoy the work that you guys do, and I'm happy for you guys to have hired a bunch of new folks. I see a lot of good breakdowns, a lot of really awesome stuff. So you guys are outstanding. You serve the community extremely well with what you do. So, no, it's great, and I look forward to having you. I think Matt is coming on next week sometime to do a trade deadline pod, which I'm excited about. And
excellent.
So, yeah, I think we'll be doing some fun stuff there. And, Joe, like I said, you'll be on soon. Congratulations to your daughter. And thanks again to all you guys for all you guys support my stuff, too, which is really appreciated as well.
Absolutely. Thank you so much, Peter. Once again, ladies and gentlemen, that was Peter Edmiston. He's terrific. Friend of GBB, not just GBB Live. Make sure you're checking him out on Sports 56 WHBQ in Memphis. Read his articles in the commercial appeal when he posts them as an NBA contributor. And also check out that Locked On Grizzlies podcast. Again, I give Peter a hard time. He has had Matt on there, Matt Ardlicko, one of our best writers. He's had Andrew Ford. He does a terrific job with that podcast. He's at Peter Edmiston on Twitter. This is Grizzly Bear Blues Live. I am your host, Joe Mullinax. And before I get to my next guest, I want to give a shout-out to our wonderful sponsor, FanEssentials.net. Make sure you're checking them out for all your Memphis Grizzlies fan gear needs. Here we are in the All-Star break. You're trying to gear up for the playoff run. You want to get some new swag for you or for the Grizzlies fan in your life. Go to fanessentials.net, sign up to the subscription site. It's terrific. It's fast. It's easy. Great gear delivered right to your door. Again, I can't stress it enough. Big fan of fanessentials.net. They're a terrific sponsor of GBB Live. They've helped us out with watch parties in the past, and we're excited to continue that relationship into 2017 and beyond. So again, fanessentials.net, terrific sponsor of Grizzly Bear Blues Live. My next guest on the show this week is making his GBB Live debut. Very excited to have him on. He is an excellent Grizzlies mind, kind of new to the game with the moves at 92.9 FM ESPN Memphis in the past few months or so. He's the executive producer of the Jeff Calkins Show. He also is a host and columnist for 92.9 ESPN in Memphis. Again, I'm excited to have him on the program for the first time. He is Jeffrey Wright. Jeffrey, how are things? Hello, Jeffrey. All right, we're going to keep working on trying to get Jeffrey here. While we are working on getting Jeffrey locked in, give me one moment. Jeffrey, you there? Still don't have Jeffrey. Okay. It's important to keep in mind, ladies and gentlemen, that the Memphis Grizzlies are a team that really have some moves that need to be made in terms of the future. Now, you can't really look at this team in their present context and say they're a finished product, mostly because Chandler Parsons is not a finished product. He's a major piece of their future. He's a guy that they're trying to get into and get developed. And for some reason, he's just not there yet. And again, the major reason being the knee issue. But he's really just struggling, and he's a guy that you really have to invest in, and it might come down to just sitting him down, not allowing him to hurt himself or hurt the team any further if it gets to that point. Again, I think I have a little bit longer leash than Peter does, but at the same time, Chandler has to be somebody that they can count on. Chandler has to be someone that they can look to as a option down the road, not just on the team in this moment, but also in the team or on the team, excuse me, moving forward. He really is somebody that, give me one moment here, working with the audio here, live podcast, right? When you look at this team and you really kind of consider their future, it really is something that they have to take into consideration if it gets to that point. For me, like I said, it's around April 1st. For others, it is something, you know, like Peter said, maybe even right after the All-Star break. The patience is wearing thin with Chandler. For me, you keep in mind that he's coming back from that injury. And I know that it's frustrating that he posts these things on social media and he does stuff that he shouldn't necessarily do on social media. And that point, I don't necessarily debate. But you have to give him a chance to recover. And then it also is incumbent on Fizdale that if he isn't able to get to the point where you need him to be. And one of the things that I didn't get to talk to Peter about, a guy like James Ennis, for example, that he brought up. I love James Ennis. And I really like James Ennis because he's malleable. His game can fit and mix and fit to whoever he is around. He is capable of mixing with a Zach Randolph, Brandon Wright front court, as well as a Marcus Aldridge, Michael Green front court. He's able to mix with Tony Douglas, Mike Conley, Andrew Harrison, a variety of those types of guys. He can fit in with all those different dudes because his game fits the games of so many other people. Let's see if we have Jeffrey Wright back on. Jeffrey, you there?
Yeah, can you hear me now?
Yes, I can hear you now. Hello,
sorry
Jeffrey.
Sorry about that. Yeah. Sorry.
No, it's okay.
I tried to download all the software and thought I was good. So I'm a former podcaster myself. So I guess my rack was not exactly set up appropriately. So my apologies.
Well, the funny thing about that, Jeffrey, is that's a quote that might be being said to by Chandler Parsons to people in Cancun for the next few days. The rack not being set up appropriately. So, you know, I understand. You're good. No worries on my end. I'm glad that we were able to figure it out and make it work. And like I was telling our listeners, you got to love live recording of these podcasts. But we're glad that we got it figured out. Glad that you're on. And I mentioned to the folks before we brought you on, You know, I'm excited to have you because I think you're doing great work over at 92.9. Spoke to you a little bit when I was on the Calkin show a little while ago. And one of the major topics that Jeff and I, today especially, and I made sure people understood, I have great respect for Jeff, and Jeff obviously has had me on his show a few times, and we're good. But we did have a bit of a disagreement with Chandler Parsons. Jeff posted a Take 5 today about Parsons and his social media usage, which I can hear arguments for because it's a bit excessive. But at the same time, the guy's going on vacation. What do you want him to do? You want him to live in the gym when the rest of the NBA is taking a break? I don't know. I think that's a little bit iffy. So Chandler Parsons is one of the folks that we're hoping, Jeffrey, can find a way to get healthy. Brandon Wright, of course, looks pretty healthy, especially after the Brooklyn game. He really was executing pretty well. I was talking to Peter Edmiston before you came on, and he said he's at 70-30 that the Grizzlies are going to make a trade. I'm at about 70-30 the opposite direction. I think it's unlikely they make a move, but I think it's possible they do. I'm of the belief that they're hoping that Parsons and Wright getting right as they can, especially in the case of Parsons, they're looking at that as enough of an acquisition, getting a healthy roster that they thought that they would have, because they haven't really been healthy almost the entire season. That health being an acquisition, do you buy into that, or do you think they need to make some other type of move heading into the deadline?
Yeah, I think I probably lean closer to you than I do to Peter. However, I think Peter's pretty plugged in, so I don't think that his information is bad information. I mean, I obviously know what I'm hearing. I know where that comes from. So to me, it all boils down to one question. I mean, do you really think that Tony Douglas is your backup point guard moving forward? As you know, is a playoff basketball team going to have Tony Douglas as its backup point guard? If the answer to that is yes, I don't see them absolutely making a move. However, if the answer to that to no is no, then I think they honestly have to make a move. But then it becomes a question of how. I mean, to me, I don't see a lot of tradable assets. I mean, you know, it's one thing to sit there and say we want to make a deal. And by the way, I mean, how many other teams in the NBA would like to get a veteran backup point guard that solidifies their second unit? I mean, I would imagine somewhere between 8 and 10. So,
sure.
You know, you're in a position where yeah, you've got a need, but everyone else has a need. And, you know, it kind of comes down to simple economics and, you know, what are you going to give up that someone really wants? Because I don't see a ton of tradable assets, whether it be an expiring contract, whether it be a team friendly contract, whether it be, you know, a player that maybe a team sees more in than maybe the Grizzlies do at this moment. I just don't really – I don't know how you make it work at this point.
There really is a bit of a disconnect there, and I'm glad you mentioned it. You have to kind of understand that outside of the bubble of Memphis, and I think that is something that people get caught up in, not necessarily you, but in terms of fan base, in terms of other media types, bloggers, whatever – you know, you get attached to a guy like Tony Allen. He's a great example. Tony Allen has an immense value to the Memphis Grizzlies fan base, to the community. He is more valuable to the Memphis Grizzlies than he is anywhere else. So if you hear a trade offer of, let's just say, Tyus Jones, and again, I don't even know if this works in the trade machine. I'm just, you know, spitballing. Tyus Jones for Tony Allen. You know, half of the fan base is going to say, who in the hell is Tyus Jones? And they're not going to think that that's equal value. People are, oh, my God, how did Tony Allen not get a first-round draft pick? Well, of course Tony Allen's not going to get a first-round draft pick. I mean, you got to be realistic. Of course a team's not going to, you know, look at Jarrell Martin and look at him as valuable or as being as valuable a piece as maybe he could have been several months ago, because now they know that you have Deontay Davis. Jamichael Green is potentially going to be brought back. You know, Jarrell Martin is somebody that you're trying to part with, but he also is the third or fourth best power forward on your roster. How high are they going to be on somebody else's roster in terms of the depth chart? So in terms of valuable pieces, you have to imagine a Deontay Davis or a Wade Baldwin would be a valuable piece, but at the same time, do you really want to move them at this stage? I don't think so. You have a second-round draft pick this year from the Miami Heat that I think they could tag with a Vince Carter or a Brandon Wright, and maybe that adds some value, even though Miami's been on a tear lately and kind of taking away from that value. But do you really want to move Brandon Wright, who's looked terrific? Do you really want to move Vince Carter, who is playing his best season as a Memphis Grizzly, even though Vince is more than likely gone at the end of the year? How much value is there in him staying in Memphis, helping to continue to work with these young players, being that steadying presence off the bench? It's a tough question. That's one of the reasons that I guess the Grizzlies front office gets paid the big bucks. We're talking with Jeffrey Wright, the executive producer of the Jeff Calkins Show. He also is a host and columnist over at 92.9 ESPN in Memphis. Follow him on Twitter if you don't already at jwright, that's W-R-I-G-H-T, 92.9 ESPN. We mentioned a little bit about Tony Douglas. I'm not a big fan of his, Jeffrey, if I'm being honest. I think he's a guy who's a basketball player who can dribble the ball, and clearly he shoots the ball better than Andrew Harrison, so I can't really fault him for that. But at the same time, this is a guy who the Cleveland Cavaliers desperately needed a playmaking guard on the perimeter, and they waived him at the beginning of the season. So how good is Tony Douglas if a team that desperately needs a playmaker waives Tony Douglas? I'm just not sure that you can look at him and say he's the answer, but lots of people love him. Are you a Tony Douglas fan? Would you sign him for the rest of the year when his second 10-day is up?
I mean, when you ask, am I a fan, I think the inevitable follow-up question I would always have to ask is, in what role? I mean, you know, sure. as a third guard, you know, a third point guard, sure, by all means, bring it on. But, I mean, last night, and, you know, the game last Wednesday, they're all running together now, but it was the ultimate, to me, it was the ultimate microcosm of what Tony Douglas is. He comes down, someone kicks it to him for, you know, a three from the elbow. He drills it. It was the Phoenix game. He drills he immediately comes down on the opposite end of the floor and gets just obliterated off the bounce. I mean, you know, last night everyone wants to talk about, you know, Drew Holiday. I mean, to me, I'm not taking away anything Drew Holiday did, but when it's that easy to beat somebody off the bounce and off the dribble, like that shouldn't happen at that level. Like, that's something that you see in, like, you know, when you see mismatches in high school, a guy just blows right by a defender and goes to the hole. Or, you know, in college, if you have an elite guard that is going up against inferior competition. But that shouldn't happen at this level. And to me, what does that say about last night when, okay, forget, I'm not talking about the minutes where the comeback was going on, but the last couple of possessions, especially when there were dead balls, you had the opportunity to substitute offense for defense. And Fizdale elects to keep Tony Douglas in there. And I don't know if it was, you know, I mean, let's be real. Tony Allen was horrific last night. And
absolutely.
I mean, there's no way to get around it. And, you know, he had an awful night. And, you know, does Fizdale make the decision at that point, hey, this comeback has been, you know, largely because Tony Douglas has been in there, let's roll with the hot hand. I mean, to me, I don't understand how, when you're at that point in the late possessions, when you had the opportunity to go offense for defense, you still had two timeouts. So even if you get the defensive stop, you were more than likely calling timeout anyway. So you could have gone right back to the offensive setup. I don't know what it says. And so when you look at Tony Douglas, I mean, you know, he's on a 10-day for a reason. And are you really basically going to commit to him for the rest of the season because essentially you've given up on Andrew Harrison? I mean, that's what it comes down to. And, you know, everyone can say, well, you know, you can make a deal. Well, okay, the only ones I'd really listen to, if you can get anything for Tony Allen, you should do it. I firmly believe that. He's a 35-year-old primary defender whose defense has been suspect at best this year. So if you can get anything, I would do that. If you can trade Vince and as you said, tie together another piece, tie together a pick. Okay. But I mean, you know, realistically, what are you getting in return for that? And so to me, this becomes everyone wants to make it an emotional and whatnot. It's a simple economics decision. Does any move that you make you better? And so right now I just feel like the Grizzlies are just kind of stuck. I mean, even if you'd like to make a move, I don't know what's realistic. I personally wouldn't get rid of Brandon Wright, not from the athleticism standpoint, just because that's a really team-friendly contract. And those are valuable. And so, you know, when you look at it from that perspective, I mean, I don't know if trading Brandon Wright is Wise. Now you could make an argument. Hey, well, you know, coming off the injury, he's, you know, when a guy comes off an injury and looks as athletic as he does at his position, people maybe will forgive some lack of production numbers, even though he's been fairly productive. And so maybe there's an argument to be made. Well, his stock's probably pretty high right now. But at the same time, I wouldn't be in the business of giving up a team friendly contract.
I agree with that, especially considering the situation with Jermichael Green. You have no idea what some team is going to offer him in restricted free agency. You might lose him. If Brandon Wright is healthy, he becomes that guy who can maybe be a starter for you, or he can be that, he can step up and be that, you know, 20 to 25 minute a night big off the bench. I think that I agree with you on Brandon Wright. It really is going to be interesting with Tony Allen, and you're not going to make many fans with that prediction and that, or not prediction,
no, but
necessarily,
like,
but that opinion.
You know,
but I think you're fair. I don't disagree with it.
I mean, and I will say this, though I was born and raised in Memphis, the genesis of the Tony Allen era occurred when I was in college. I went to school out west, and though I had league pass and I still probably watched, you know, somewhere between 65 and 70 games a year, I was not in the city when that kind of movement took off. And I will openly admit, I don't have the Tony Allen gene that everyone else does. And it's not that I dislike Tony. I see his benefits, but I kind of equate – I've always wondered this because defensive metrics, I feel like, are so difficult to actually – I obviously, like, love analytics, and I'm very much – I like a snapshot of – I like a snapshot of where someone is individually, but I do feel like defense is very difficult to truly show what a guy impacts because, you know, I mean, defense is so much communication, rotation, switches, whatnot. And Fizdale made reference to it last night that part of the reason why Tony Allen went in there last night is because he was not communicating on defense and he led to several easy baskets because, you know, he's a gambler. I mean, that's what he is. I mean, part of the reason I feel like he's kind of the, you know, he's a Brett Favre. He's a gunslinging quarterback, but it's on the defensive end. And basically what he does is he takes high risk plays that when they work out, they're flash plays. It's so rare to think about a highlight play on defense, but I feel like he makes several highlight plays on defense. And so then it kind of becomes like a, you know, like a cornerback, like a Richard Sherman, a Josh Norman, in which he tells you how good of a defender is. And then you start seeing these highlight plays, and then you kind of start buying into the narrative too, when in reality he's a very, very good defender. But I mean, it's, you know, I don't know if he's one of the five best defenders on the planet. I don't also know how you quantify that he isn't. But to me, if you're keeping him around for sentiment, and if you're keeping him around primarily to be a defensive stopper, then you have to look at the results from this year, in which, you know, I mean, well, he's probably had two or three games where he's made an impact on the defensive end, but for the most part, you know, he's kind of been a non-factor.
Yeah, and I think a good example of that, an advanced statistic that people use, and I use it, the Real Plus Minus over at ESPN. Currently, Tony Allen is second among shooting guards with a 2.17 defensive Real Plus Minus. But to kind of go along with your point of taking the stat into, you know, with a grain of salt, the number one, number three, and number four shooting guards are all San Antonio Spurs. So how are they all elite defenders, or is the scheme doing well? And then number five on that list is Sasha Vucevic of the New York Knicks. You know, there's flubs and mistakes that can happen with stats. You have to take it into complete context and in complete consideration. But like you said, the communication, the scheme, the rotation, whatever it might be, you know, that there's reasons not beyond, you know, Tony Allen being elite. And I do think he's still a good defender, but he's definitely slipped on that end. I think that's fair. Well, if you look at the standings out west going into the All-Star game, the Memphis Grizzlies are currently the sixth seed in the Western Conference. They are two games outside of the four seed, and they're a game and a half in front of the Oklahoma City Thunder, who are the current seven seed. Memphis is essentially a lock at this point to make the playoffs. I don't see them falling lower than the seven seed, barring some cataclysmic injury, which unfortunately Memphis has had before. So where do you see the Grizzlies kind of fitting in at the end of this thing? I had them going 48 and 34 at the beginning of the season. That's probably good for the 5 or 6 seed, considering how the Jazz and the Clippers, once Chris Paul comes back, can play and what they're capable of. And to be honest with you, the 6 seed might be a better fit for Memphis if they hope to make a run in the Western Conference. Where do you see Memphis fitting in the Western Conference moving forward? If they go 48 and 34, like I said, that would mean they'd have to go 14 and 10 their last 24 games. I think that's pretty reasonable.
Well, I think 14 and 10 would essentially be chalk. I mean, if you look at it right now, I think
sure.
based on winning percentage, if you go based on winning percentage, I think they would go 14 and 10 down the stretch. And, you know, again, that puts them at 48 wins. That surpasses Vegas's total, I think, by about 5.5 games. And so, I mean, you have to say that was successful. I mean, it all comes down to, do you believe that will a healthy Clippers with Chris Paul, will they be able to make up enough ground and catch Houston? I personally think Houston's probably far enough in front that I don't think that's probably reasonable. And so then, I mean, I kind of agree with you. I feel like overall the Grizzlies are deeper than the Jazz. And so as you get into this, as you get into kind of the stretch run here, and also when you look at the schedule, I mean, you know, if you look at the schedule and you do the proverbial move that probably every human being does, which is also sometimes an exercise in futility, but you just start looking at the opponents. If you just look at what the first 5 games coming back from the All-Star break, you got Indiana and Indianapolis, Denver and Denver. Those are Friday, Sundays. Tuesday, you've got at Phoenix. Then you have at Dallas. I mean, even though it's a road stretch to start, I mean, those are all 4 beatable teams. And now nothing's a given. And so then you start doing the move. All right, at Houston, even though the Grizzlies have won there, and lead the season series 2-1. I mean, you know, if you have to kind of play fair, so you'd have to say, all right, that's a loss. But then you get that. Then you get the Clippers at home. I mean, you know, you can reasonably, going down the stretch, you can reasonably find 15, 16 wins if you, you know, that's probably being pretty unbiased, unreasonable. Now, I don't think that's ever fair just because you never know based on schedule, you know, who's tired and fatigue and whatnot. You never know those things. But I mean, if you look at that, I mean, I think they're going to be square at the 5 seed. And so, you know, then you're looking at another matchup with the Clippers, which it's always fun. You know, I mean, it's almost like you kind of want to see Houston just because you kind of want to see something different. You know what I mean? It's kind of like,
definitely,
you know, it's almost like, you know, a new 7's better than an old 7 just because it's new. And so, like, you know what I mean? Like, it's kind of one of those type things. And so, you know, I'd probably rather see that. Also, I think they're probably – I think at full strength, if both teams are at full strength, I think the Grizzlies match up better with Houston than they do with the Clippers, even though they've beaten the Clippers before. But, I mean, if you look at it, if Paul comes back healthy, that was a really freaking good basketball team when they were healthy earlier in the year. And so, you know, I think if you're playing that game, I think you'd probably rather play Houston. But, you know, I mean, it's still all kind of – it's all kind of relative to me because basically you're essentially just kind of playing for the same thing. It's, you know, basically you're playing to set up where you win a playoff series, and then, you know, you're probably getting bounced after that, barring a significant injury to someone else. And then if you do have that, you know, you could wind up, you know, being in the Western Conference Finals. But to me, the 1 through 3 right now, the only team I could see the Grizzlies beating is Houston.
I think they have a shot against San Antonio. It would have to be a 7-game series, and they would have to find a way, and this would be on Fizdale and his staff, they'd have to find a way to negate Kawhi defending Mike Conley, because that's always been the kryptonite. That's been a game, set, match. You can't stop it. Your second best player is now negated. We can focus on Gasol, and your offense is dead. And that would, in that series, we would really need a healthy Chandler Parsons to try to take some of that away as well, which we may not see the rest of the year. I have them, like I said, 48 and 34. And as you said, I think that's fair. That's conservative. I could see this team winning 50 games. If they do go 48 and 34, that puts them in that 6th seed. And I think that is the easiest path to the Western Conference Finals. Now, I do not advocate tanking for that. I think you play out your schedule and you do the best you can. I do think they'll continue to rest guys they'll value the health and the fresh legs more than maybe a random win against, say, Atlanta on a night in March. So there might be a chance that they sit some guys in some situations. But I do think if they find a way to get to that 5 seed or 4 seed, first off, if you're going to make the five seed, you might as well push for the 4 seed so you can have home court advantage. But if you're going to be comfortable with being in that 6 seed slot, you're familiar with Houston, you've played them relatively well, it won't be an easy series, but you've got a shot against them more so than you, say, would the Spurs or the Warriors in the first round. And then you move on to the second, you get the Spurs instead of the Warriors, and then you roll the basketball out. If this team wins a playoff series, I would say that is a massive success of a season for the Grizzlies, considering that there were some people that thought they'd be the 8 seed or wouldn't make the playoffs at all. Like you said, Vegas had them at like 43.5 wins. So that looks pretty unbelievable now. It really is just going to bear out and turn into how does David Fizdale manage the minutes of guys heading into the playoffs. So like I said, they're essentially a lock. So what they do with those minutes moving forward will be one of the interesting storylines of the second half, not even necessarily second half, the sprint after the All-Star break. We'll get you out of here on this, Jeffrey. We usually preview in the last part of the last segment, preview the week ahead. Obviously, no games for the Grizzlies, and we already talked about the trade deadline. So let's talk about All-Star weekend. First off, you've got, and I have it pulled up here, on All-Star Saturday night, the Taco Bell Skills Challenge, which does not involve eating Taco Bell, which is disappointing. Your participants are Devin Booker of the Suns, DeMarcus Cousins of the Kings, Anthony Davis of the Pelicans, Nikola Jokic of the Nuggets. You've got Gordon Hayward of the Jazz, Kristaps Porzingis of the Knicks, Isaiah Thomas of the Celtics, and John Wall of the Wizards. I think I've got John Wall pulling out the victory in the Skills Challenge. Who do you got winning the 2017 Skills Challenge?
Who won it last year? Carl Anthony Towns? I think that's right.
I think so.
Honestly, Anthony Davis is not a bad pick. I mean, you know, people always forget he was
true.
A guard until his junior year of high school. So, you know, I'll take Anthony Davis, but really I started thinking about, like, because I was looking at, like, All-Star Weekend, do people really watch this? Like, I started to, like, realize, like, I remember, like, as a kid watching the slam dunk contest, but then you look at the slam dunk contest now, there are only 4 participants? Like, I was starting to think, like, you know, is this – I understand, like, you know, the All-Star Games is the you know, it's a feature event, if you will, but I started, like, when you look at it, you're just like, was it a bigger deal because we were just kids? And you know what I mean? Like, and everything's a bigger deal. Like, you think now, like, the same thing with, like, the home run derby. You know, 10-year-old Jeffrey would never have missed the home run derby.
Sure.
I don't even have a clue. I don't even have a clue who's, you know, I think somebody put on a show the last couple times, but I mean, like, I don't have a clue who won. I mean, and I would consider myself a decent baseball fan. So I've always wondered, is that just natural with age, or are we in general not caring?
I think it's with age. At least it depends on the sport. I mean, baseball, you could do a whole separate debate on baseball fading with young people, at least. The audience for baseball is so old, especially compared to basketball. But I think All-Star Saturday night does have some fans. I do think the slam dunk, you know, Zach LaVine and Aaron Gordon have brought that back a little bit. To me, I would rather watch All-Star Saturday night than the game itself. Now, I'll watch the game this year because obviously Marc Gasol is in it. But to me, the skills competition, the three-point shootout, I kind of enjoy those contests. So you've got Anthony Davis. I've got John Wall. The three-point contest is the next event. The participants in that are Eric Gordon of the Rockets, Kyrie Irving of the Cavs, Kyle Lowry of the Raptors, Wesley Matthews of the Mavericks, McCollum from the Blazers, Klay Thompson from the Warriors, you've got Kemba Walker from the Hornets, and Nick Swaggy P. Young of the Los Angeles Lakers. I'm going to go kind of a sleeper pick on this one, or maybe it's not, I don't know. I'm going to go C.J. McCollum of the Blazers, just because he seems to torch the Grizzlies, and I'm just going to blindly pick him. I could also see Eric Gordon winning it, though.
This is kind of like a battle of, like, who do I hate the least? I'm going to say this. I'm going to go with Nick Young, not because I believe in him.
Wow.
Solely because he has one of my all-time favorite moves, in which he doesn't put tattoos on his right arm because his right arm is strictly for buckets. And I just think that's hilarious. So,
no,
I, Well, I think he's probably less than a desirable human being. I'll go with him on that.
Okay, fair enough. I like that for Nick Young. And then finally, of course, the main event, the slam dunk contest, no Zach LaVine this year. He wasn't going to do it even when he was healthy. And now, of course, with his torn ACL, he's certainly not doing it. You've got Aaron Gordon coming back. Lots of people like him to win after his matchups with Zach LaVine the past couple of years. You got DeAndre Jordan. You've got Glenn Robinson III, and you've got Derrick Jones Jr. I'm going to go DeAndre Jordan because that dude has done some of the most violent, vicious dunks, and I think that he has an elite athleticism that is really going to look special given his size in this environment. I'm going to go DeAndre Jordan. I think he's going to win it.
Yeah, I don't really hate that pick. I've got kind of a mini theory that basically DeAndre Jordan's dunking ability has convinced people that he's like an elite basketball player because
yes. –
So many of us, especially when you play out on the West Coast, like let's be real, let's not kid ourselves. Like most of what we watch in West Coast basketball is either when our team plays a West Coast team, or what we see on SportsCenter, or what we see on highlights, what we see on social media. The way that he dunks so freaking hard, and they're just so like impressive, and just like you just go
right.
Wow when you see them. I swear to God, he's convinced people that like he's. He's a better player than he is. I think he's a very good player, but I don't know if he's at this level that we kind of hold him in. And so I don't hate that pick. I don't hate Glenn Robinson III. Maybe I'm just, I'm just nostalgic.
I'm with you, on him.
For his old man, but I think he's in that category of just freak athlete. I mean, it kind of also comes to how do you impress us anymore? Like, is there really anything that kind of hasn't been done? And so the reason why I think your DeAndre Jordan pick is safe is because almost anything that he does at his size, especially when you have his leaping ability and you just have his freak athleticism, it looks more impressive when I'm not really sure if what he's doing is more impressive. Does that make sense?
Makes all the sense in the world, and that's exactly what I'm going with. And I do agree, DeAndre Jordan is the most overrated player in the NBA, at least in my opinion. He's a tremendous athlete, but I do believe it was either Charles Barkley or Shaquille O'Neal who made this joke. You could lock DeAndre Jordan in a gym with a basketball overnight and say you can, there's a zero on the scoreboard, and you could say you can only shoot outside the paint. Let's see how many points you have in the morning, and it would maybe say 2 or 4. I just don't see him as the skilled basketball player that others do. Maybe I'm ignorant to him, but he is a ferocious dunker, and I do think that he is going to be dominant in that contest. I just don't think Aaron Gordon's going to win, period. I could see Glenn Robinson III winning. I could even see the Derrick Jones kid from the Phoenix Suns winning. I just don't see Gordon. I would take the field in that bet. And it's going to be interesting. I'm looking forward to watching, especially on Sunday night, the All-Star game. How do you think Mark's going to do? We'll get you out of here on that. How's Mark going to play?
I mean, isn't it kind of noteworthy if you don't play well, based on the way that the game is set up?
True.
Like
lack of defense.
This is kind of – yeah, and a lot of things in the world irritate me, but one of the things that really irritates me is when we build this entire narrative about the Pro Bowl that we do. And I'm just sitting there thinking like, yes, this is obviously a bad football game. I'm not trying to defend that, but like, has anyone watched the NBA All-Star game? Because I've been watching it for 20 years. Like it's a joke. Like why do we, I don't understand. Like we've all of a sudden, do we just hold football more sacred or something? I don't know. Like it drives me insane because the game and it's, I swear to God, they play harder and shoot around. Like, I think the defense is more difficult when you're being guarded by the trainer than it is when you play in the All-Star game. So, to me, it's one of those situations where Mark, I think, set up to do well because he's a big and he's a unique big. And so, and I also think that, and I don't want to sound like Homer-ish because I don't mean it like this, but I do think there's more of a sense of pride when a guy like Mark Gasol makes it than when, Carmelo makes his 27th or when, Kobe was making it when he was still literally hadn't played in 2 years. Like, I think there is a sense of pride when a guy like Mark makes it, especially when you consider, what all he overcame. I mean, let's be real, seven foot one guys with foot and ankle issues. That's not exactly a recipe for a comeback story. And so, you know, where you consider where he was last year and where he is this year and how well he's played this year. And, you know, I think that there will be a sense of pride that he'll take. And he knows that, you know, I think he really wears, you know, being the Memphis kid kind of with a badge of honor, even though he's, you know, from Spain, you know, he went to high school here. I think there's kind of an element of home for him. And I think that he really does, he realizes that whether or not the rest of the country's eyeballs are on him, his people's eyes are on him. And, you know, I think he really is cognizant of that.
And it is because I think, you know, the small market thing, but I'm with you in terms of the All-Stars. Like, I'm not looking forward to watching the four Warriors and the two Cleveland Cavaliers now with Kevin Love out.
Well,
and,
let me stop you right there. If Russell Westbrook is on the floor with those four, then yes, I am looking to watch that.
Yeah, fair enough. But I'm talking more in a large point of like Kemba Walker of the Charlotte Hornets or Gordon Hayward of the Utah Jazz. Like those guys, like you said, Kyle Lowry is another one, you know, who, you know, maybe should get that attention a little more, but doesn't. Isaiah Thomas, you know, the guys that are truly great players in the league who don't get the shine because of the Warriors world and because of LeBron's kingdom in Cleveland and everybody just waiting for that rematch in June, which is obviously the most likely scenario still. But I'm excited to watch those guys that, you know, get a little bit less attention and hopefully they all shine. I think my major prediction for Mark is he's going to make a Steph Curry-esque three. That's his impressive thing he'll do. He'll pull up from like 30 plus feet and he'll drain a three showing off his new range. That's my Gasol guess for Sunday night. Jeffrey, thank you so much for your time. It is much appreciated. We went a little long. I appreciate you staying with us here. Obviously, we'll have you on again in the future. Continue the great work over at 92.9.
I appreciate it, my man.
All right. Once again, ladies and gentlemen, that was Jeffrey Wright of 92.9 FM ESPN Memphis. Make sure you're following him on Twitter if you don't already, at jwright929 ESPN. We're finishing up here on Grizzly Bear Blues Live. I am your host, Joe Mullinax. Our next show will be a trade deadline special Thursday, December 23rd, 8 p.m. Central Time. We'll have one guest. We'll go a little bit longer with that one guest instead of having the two guests. And we'll really kind of dig into what moves were made, what moves weren't made. We'll take a look at the Grizzlies' immediate schedule coming out of the All-Star break. They will resume play on February 24th. In Indiana against the Pacers. So we'll take a look at that and the trade deadline. You won't want to miss it. Next show will be February 24th, same time, 8 p.m. Central for the live recording. Thank you to Peter Edmiston. Thank you to Jeffrey Wright, my two terrific guests on this week's show. Make sure you're checking out the podcast on iTunes. Subscribe there. Subscribe on Blog Talk Radio so you never miss a show. Next week, we are going to be debuting our new podcast with Chase Lucas. The first of our two new shows will debut during the All-Star break. Excited to have Chase's show on the Blog Talk Radio airwaves. I will be his first guest. Looking forward to that. So keep an eye out for that. Also, make sure you're going to FanEssentials.net, our terrific sponsor of Grizzly Bear Blues Live. It's been a great show. It's been a great first part of this season here. Enjoy the All-Star break. Catch your breath. We all could use it, I think. And then come back next week ready to break down the trade deadline and the 24-game sprint to the playoffs for the Grizzlies coming up. Until next time, I am the site manager for Grizzly Bear Blues and the host of GBB Live, Joe Mullinax, saying grind forth, Grizz Nation. This is Grizzly Bear Blues Live.